wrists with a small noise of appreciation, and her shoulders stiffened slightly. She knew he'd been missing and worrying and thinking about her for 2 weeks, knew he'd want to make love, and she had zero interest. He moved her hair and kissed her neck, pulling her back tight against him. Carefully, she turned in the circle of his arms and put her face against his chest. "I know you're dying," she said, "and we will. Just let me be home a little while." She turned her head up to him. "All right?"
"I'm not dying," he said, running his hands along her spine. "Slightly starving, but not dying." She hugged him hard.
"Later. Promise. I'm tired right now." The phone rang. John kissed her head.
"I got it. Go lie down."
Touched at how he was keeping a barrier between her and the world, Daisy kicked off her shoes, ripped open the duvet, and slid in between the sheets. With a luxurious groan, she rolled face down in the pillows, inhaling fresh, clean familiarity. She ignored the twin wolves of guilt and worry parked on the rug. "It's not my fault we only got to make love once and I ended up hospitalized 24 hours later." One wolf turned its head with a disgusted look in its yellow eyes. "All right, fine, you're right. It was my doing. I'm sorry." She closed her eyes, exhaling heavily. Sexual drive was first out and last in, she was told. Dr. Montgomery said it. Dr. Riley said it.
Everyone said it.
"They put you on Prozac," April, her roommate at the hospital, said.
"Welcome to the Zero Libido Club, kid. Kiss your orgasms goodbye, and wait until the night sweats kick in. It's a blast."
"Kid" set Daisy's teeth on edge, along with the gleeful warnings. She'd just been admitted to a psychiatric hospital. Sex was the furthest thing from her mind. But as the days accumulated, she was alarmed at how distant a dream sex became, how utterly uninteresting. Even her trusty go-to reenactments of lovemaking with Eric only brought a dull warmth, blurred and dim, as if behind dirty sunglasses.
"It will all come back," Montgomery said. "It's not your body's priority right now."
She kept asking her body if it was sure. On restless, anxious nights when she touched herself to bring on sleep, nothing would work. She kept grinding the key in the ignition, but the engine wouldn't turn. "Give it time," Riley said. "Try not to think about it too much." Daisy rolled onto her side, wondering if thinking about how much she didn't think about sex qualified as thinking about sex. With another explosive sigh, she rolled the other way, tucking her cold hands between her knees. "Let it be," she thought. "You're home. You're in your bed. Now is now. Later is later. Be honest with him and do what you can. Tomorrow, you'll be at La Tarasque." Her eyes opened. Her mother would probably put her and John in the carriage house. "Do you ever think of marrying me?" The bedroom door creaked open.
"You asleep?"
"Not yet." He lay down next to her, holding a scrap of paper.
"That was my mom. She had a few numbers for you. Therapists on the west side you could try."
"Oh." She freed a hand and took the slip, scanned the four names without interest, and twisted to set it down on her nightstand. John's hand smoothed her hair as she faced him again and burrowed into the covers.
"I'm so glad you're home," he said.
He looked adorable, stretched out on his side, his head pillowed on one bent arm. His use of home was relaxed and unassuming, asking nothing of her but her company. She slid her hand around the back of his neck, filled with a true and tender gratitude for everything he'd done for her. Pulling up close to him, she whispered against his forehead, "Thanks for coming to get me." Getting laid properly. Daisy ran her fingers over the cap of her left shoulder. Nearly 3 months after she cut herself with a pencil sharpener, the scars were barely perceptible. "These are almost gone. The ones around my waist and back are taking longer to fade." She pulled her t-shirt sleeve down and drew up the lapel of her cardigan. "How do you feel about them fading?" Rita said. Daisy smiled. "You always know what to ask."
"It's my job."
She picked at the rough edge of her fingernail. "Is it weird to say I miss them? That I feel almost mournful when I notice how they're disappearing?"
Not at all, Rita said. Cutting has two aspects. One is to release pain, and the other is to have a physical, or rather visual, manifestation of pain. It's about the scar.
Yes,
and it can often be difficult when the scars fade. Daisy nodded and drew in a breath. Which is why I'm here with you.
Rita smiled as she drew off her glasses and cleaned them with one of her cuffs.
I'm curious, what made you choose me from the list John's mother gave?
Do you know her?
We have mutual colleagues. I know who she is, but I don't know her personally. Would it bother you if I did?
Yes, Daisy said. And to answer your original question, I picked you because you were a four-block walk from my apartment.
Laughing, Rita put her glasses back on.
Convenience first.
The silent shuffled around, getting comfortable.
So I'm back at work, Daisy said.
What's that like?
I'm a little out of shape, but everyone's being nice to me. And it's a relief that class is still my friend. I mean, it seems no matter what happens, dancing is still a constant.
First position, as always, first position. I put my hand on the bar and put my feet in first, and two pliés later, everything goes away. I guess I need to find the equivalent for when I'm not in class or on stage.
What do you like to do?
Read. I started knitting again. I did it a little in college. Taylor Revelle taught me. But I never got into it as a hobby. I remembered it while I was in the hospital, and my mom brought me some yarn and a pair of needles. Big, fat ones. It's like knitting Fisher-Price style. I find working with my hands to be relaxing. Something meditative about it, and I don't much care about the end product. She smiled. I sound like David. Get there, but not be there. I like to knit, but not to have knitted something. Anyway, how do you feel, physically? Are the meds giving you any issues?
No. Yes. I mean, I feel better, no question. I don't have that constant anxiety. The daily road of life isn't filled with sudden sinkholes. I'm eating and I'm sleeping.
Are you having disturbing dreams?
Not disturbing, but vivid. Vivid and weird. And the night sweats, oh my God.
Yes, unfortunately, it's one of the adverse effects.
It's so gross. It's not even a clean sweat, but that really slimy post-workout drench. I'm killing four pairs of sheets a week, and for no fun reason.
How is your sex drive?
Out to lunch. Every now and then, I'll feel like it, but it's always a passive thing. Like, I can have sex because I can tolerate it. Like, I know John wants to, and I think, yeah, all right, I can do it for him. I can accept him into me tonight and find something in it. But I never feel spontaneously sexy. I'm never horny. I'm never fully connected. I don't lose myself in it, and I can't have an orgasm to save my life. And frankly, that sucks. I've never come with John. I tell him not to feel bad about it because I can barely make myself come.
Rita flipped the pages of her notebook. You're on the Prozac alone, correct?
Yeah.
I'm going to write you a script for Wellbutrin. It's shown to be effective in treating SSRI-induced sexual dysfunction. We may have to fiddle around with the dosage, but let's give this a try.
All right.
This isn't the most professional of observations, but life is so much easier to deal with when you're getting laid properly.
Daisy worried her teeth at her thumbnail as Rita was writing, her throat dry around unspoken words. Poised on the edge of a secret, caught between hiding and telling.
Why was hiding so much easier?
Funny, she said, and cleared her throat. The one thing that always turns me on is when John touches my scars.
Rita finished writing, tore the slip off her pad, and handed it to Daisy. Can you tell me more?
Tears sprang to her eyes.
She pressed her lips tight, shaking her head.
I don't know.
You're safe here, Rita said.
I don't know what it is. He runs his fingers over them, the ones on my back, the two deep ones that won't ever fade. He touches them, and I love it. I'm glad they won't fade. In a sick, twisted way, I'm proud of them. God, I'm such a coward.
She thought Rita was unsurprisable, but for the first time in 2 months of sessions, Rita's face registered true shock.
You're a coward,
she said.
Why do you say that?
They're on my back, Daisy said. She was crying now. I cut the deepest on my back, where I wouldn't have to see. He has to look at them, and he runs his fingers over them, and he hates them, but I love it. Sometimes it's the only intimate touch I love.
She yanked a tissue from the box and held it to her eyes.
I cut where I couldn't see. It's so passive-aggressive.
Her shoulders went limp as she blew her nose. The euphoria existed in unburdening her heart. She felt a little sick inside, yet the buzz beneath the skin of her face was almost pleasant.
You set so little value on your own strength, Rita said.
Because I feel like I'm weak and stupid.
You toughed it out after the shooting. Worked your ass off to make a comeback only a year later. You toughed it out through drug withdrawal. You're still toughing out a cruel emotional desertion by your lover. Where most people would bottom out, you quickly regrouped after you lost your job, came to one of the hardest cities in the world to make a living as an artist and found work on your own. You have little free time, yet volunteer to comfort infants who are detoxing from heroin. You're one of a handful of cuddlers with the stomach and the strength to hold that kind of screaming. These are not small feats, Daisy, nor accomplishments made by idiots. On one hand, I'm aghast at what you suffered alone. On the other hand, I don't often encounter your kind of resiliency, and it's not something to be dismissed. Before Daisy could process this speech, maybe preen a little, Rita went on.
Why do you tough everything out alone?
What happened to the courage to be a mess? Open-mouthed, spent and stunned, Daisy could only shake her head.
I don't know what happened to me.
Rita's eyes flicked to her watch and she smiled. Something to think about for next week. But Daisy still sat frozen, turning Rita's words over in her mind.
Do you really believe, she said,
what Eric's been doing to me is cruel? It took Rita a moment to answer. Daisy could see her mind's gears turning, measuring words and weighing their objectivity.
I don't know him, Rita said, but I believe what you did hurt him terribly, and I also believe he could have made better or different choices to deal with it. I sometimes wonder why he chose such total disconnection.
I wonder too, Daisy said. Every day, I wonder.
Therapy left her so emotionally shredded, she tried to schedule her appointments on the days when she wasn't performing. After a late afternoon session, she had just enough energy to stumble the four blocks home and trudge up the two flights of stairs to her apartment. John was already there. At her parents' insistence, she'd given him a key.
I want him to be able to get to you, Joe said, in a tone that brooked no discussion.
John didn't abuse the privilege, and always let her know when he'd be letting himself in on his off nights, which he tried to schedule with hers whenever he could. He was napping. Daisy tiptoed and heeled off her shoes as quietly as possible. Without opening his eyes, he put out an arm and folded back the quilt for her. She slid beneath, moved into the warm nest he made. She sighed. Of all the simple pleasures in life, lying down was in the top five. His arm with a quilt closed over her, tucking her in.
Get beat up, he whispered.
Bruised. He cuddled closer, his mouth against her temple.
Poor thing.
So tired.
Shh. Go to sleep.
He held her tight, his arm heavy and protective across her chest, one of his calves over hers. It took 5 minutes for her ears to sort out the ambient sounds of the city outside and weave them with the ocean waves of John's breathing. Her thoughts slowly dissolved, and she fell into a deep, motionless rest. When she woke up, the room had gone dark, and John's hands were on her with a different heaviness. It was easiest when she was still wreathed in sleep, her body more open to sex when she was slightly lethargic. It wasn't bad. It was sex. It didn't suck. But she was always conscious of how she made love to John, not with him. How she surfed the waves of his pleasure, knowing how happy it made him when she responded to his overtures. Even happier when she extended them, slid a hand down his pants while he was cooking, climbed on top of him in bed, or stepped into the tub while he was showering.
Seeing him happy filled her with a genuine joy. It was a lot like the joy of daily bar work. Daisy loved being in class, but she often hated going to class. Getting up and dressed and motivated was a drag, but the only way to be there was to go. In the same way, she made herself initiate sex, knowing some kind of pleasure was usually waiting for her, even if it was only feeling John's smile against her mouth. She loved his smile. She sighed.
"I love conversations that start with sighing," he said.
He was curled up naked behind her, their hands twined between her breasts. "Rita gave me a new prescription," she said. "Something called Wellbutrin. It's supposed to help with the lack of sex drive." The chuckles in his chest vibrated against her back.
"You have such charming pillow talk."
She squeezed her eyes. "I'm sorry." His arm tightened around her. "I'm teasing. I'm all about whatever makes you feel better." "You're so sweet to me," she said.
"I'm not sweet, I'm greedy," he said, curving a hand around her breast.
She knew he was. Greedy for the tsunami of her own passion to crash over him for once, to see her crumbling under the weight of desire, undone and uninhibited in the dark.
"You're sighing again," he said. "Is this angst or afterglow?"
"I detect some sass here."
"I'm sorry, what? You respect my ass, dear?"
She grabbed a throw pillow and whacked it over her shoulder. "Cute." He put his face in the curve of her neck and shoulder and pulled her close. He was adorable, sweet, sympathetic, and attentive, and patient. "Like a polar bear," Daisy said to Lucky at lunch the next day, waiting for the seal to poke through the ice.
"You could do worse," Lucky said. "And he dances."
True. It was the one arena where John left Eric in the dust. Any night off they could coordinate together, they went out dancing, clubbing, or swing 46. Ballroom, square dancing, country line dancing, a polka night at the Polish American Club. Nothing was beyond them, beneath them, or too hokey. "Greek Orthodox liturgical dance workshop," Daisy said, reading from the Village Voice.
"Bring it," he said.
Lucky stirred her iced tea and tapped the spoon on the rim of the glass. "How is Opie in bed? I always wondered."
"You did?" "No, just making girl talk."
"He's fine. I mean, he's great. I'm the boring one."
"Oh, come on. I know you have chops. I've heard you in the dark, remember?"
Daisy threw her napkin across the table. Lucky laughed and deflected it. "Was it weird, you think?" Daisy asked. "The four of us so uninhibited in the night?" Lucky shrugged. "I found it kind of comforting, actually. Beat the alternative. Will always said I'd rather overhear them making love than fighting. Not that you guys fought."
"We spared you right until the end," Daisy said, over the rim of her coffee cup. "I would have welcomed that screaming match, to be honest," Lucky said quietly.
"So how's Ed in bed?" Daisy wasn't particularly interested to know, but girl talk made a convenient subject change.
"Ed, he's predictable."
"How so?"
"I can set the calendar to it. Twice during the week. Always on Saturday night. Sunday is iffy. Depends on the football game."
Lucky ran her hand over her head and scrunched her curls. "And he talks too much." Daisy laughed.
"Talks about what?"
"He just talks. Not even dirty. I mean, good Lord, Will and I would have our goofy nights, sure. But they were the exception to the rule. Ed's home base seems to be goofball. He doesn't get... I don't want to say serious. What do I want to say? Passionate? Intense? Intense, yes. He doesn't get that way unless he's stoned. And he's never indulgent about going to bed. Like, lying around naked for an entire Sunday would be out of the question. Staying in bed to screw and talk and then fall asleep and wake up to touch and make love again. Calling in sick to work so you can go back to bed. I don't know, days. We have a good time. We laugh. We joke. He's not a bad lover, but he's not Will."
Lucky raised her glass.
"Fucking A. Did we get ruined?"
"I hope not."
Lucky took a long drink, then set her glass down. "Do you talk to Opie about what goes on in therapy?"
"Rarely. Why?"
"I just wondered. I mean, how much of a ghost is Eric?" Daisy smiled. too much. And it's hard. John says he's open to whatever I want to tell him, but...
Lucky rolled her eyes.
Oh, sure, talk about whatever you want.
Except Eric.
Which is pretty much all I talk about in therapy, she said. You know, it's hard to be in a relationship when you're working out your shit with your ex-boyfriend.
You think?
Lucky said. Between you and me and the pickles, I spend way too much time worrying about how it's going to end. How I can possibly get out of this without breaking John's heart.
You won't,
Lucky said, smiling. God, don't let me. Don't let me be that girl again. I won't cheat. I'll slit my wrists before I do that again. But please don't let me kill him. Let it end amicably. Let him leave first. After sex, night after night, she lay awake in the circle of John's arms. He slept behind her, spooning her, and she couldn't deal. Couldn't drift off with him leaning on her back, the breeze of his breathing irritating the nape of her neck. She lay wide-eyed and trapped, watching the numbers on the digital clock. 20 minutes was her quota, and she gently eased him off her and rolled flat on her back.
No spoons,
he said. I like holding hands when I sleep, she said, taking his. And some truth was in that. Lying on her back next to him, hand in hand, sleep finally came to her. You sleep differently with different boyfriends, she argued with herself. Don't make such a big deal about it. Don't compare everything to Eric. It's boring. It was impossible not to. Tiny Insights. I'd like to go back to something you said earlier, Rita said. In fact, now that we've caught the past up to the present, I have a few things, tagged, I'd like to explore. How does that sound?
All right,
Daisy said. Her eyes were mesmerized by the pages Rita was thumbing through, chunks of handwriting. No words discernible from where she sat, but she could see colors. Highlighted sections in neon pink, orange, and blue. Tiny post-it flags. One paragraph flashed by and seemed to be circled several times. She never doubted the woman was listening to her. She watched Rita take notes at every session. But what lay in her lap now went beyond notes. It might be her salvation. Or her undoing. And Daisy felt smack between wanting to curl up in bed and read it and wanting to seize the fucking thing and fling it out the window. I might be talking more than I usually do, Rita said. Daisy picked up her coffee cup. I might enjoy that. She took a sip and burned her mouth.
Damn it.
You said people at work were being nice to you. Wiping her chin, Daisy raised her eyebrows. Have you told anyone what happened to you? She sat back. You mean the cutting? Any of it. Lancaster, how do you explain your scars?
I cut where nobody could see.
I didn't have to. I mean the scars on your leg. Oh, shark attack. Rita laughed. A real guffaw, not a polite and precipitating chuckle. A laugh that slowly faded as she took in Daisy's bland expression.
Oh,
she said. You're serious?
Yeah, actually, it does the trick.
What trick?
Well, it sends the message that no, obviously it wasn't a shark attack, but it's not something I talk about.
Why is that?
It's private.
Why? Let me stop a minute. I'm going to be saying the word why a lot. It's not confrontational, and it's not invalidating the answer. It's digging into it, like a 2-year-old would, except with a PhD. Now Daisy left.
All right.
It might be difficult to find the knee-jerk because and allow yourself to cheese it out a little. Try to lean into the why and let yourself talk. Don't worry about being coherent or eloquent. Knee-jerk the other way.
All right.
Which why were we at?
Why is it private?
It's not a short story. I don't know how to tell a condensed version, and it also... I mean, I imagine it would bring all conversation to a grinding halt. I'm not sure what I mean. She blew her breath out.
What do I mean? Which scars are we talking about?
Rita seemed to rear back a little.
Do you treat them differently?
No. Yes. This is interesting. Are you more willing to talk about one set than the other?
Daisy opened her mouth, then closed it, nodded slowly as her chest grew tight. The scars from the shooting are private, she said. She drew her favorite pillow into her lap. This got hard all of a sudden.
I know.
Those scars are private.
Are they worthy?
Worthy? I don't understand.
Are they worthy of sympathy?
Rita looked uncertain as she touched her fingertips to her temple. Her voice was hesitant as it followed her own train of thought. Daisy found it comforting to see her fumble. It felt collaborative. Is your story touching? Rita said, her cadence slowly picking up. Moving. Would people have compassion for your ordeal? Would they admire your courage and your bravery? Would they understand your battle with post-traumatic stress disorder and your experience with self-harming? Daisy stared, not recognizing herself in all of that. Or, Rita said, would they only see the girl who cheated on her boyfriend? Is that how you define it all? So in essence, if you shared your story, it would be boring at best and repugnant at worst. Clutching the pillow, Daisy looked around, unable to recognize anything. She was in the dark, lost in that black, dimensionless cavern whose vastness could kill her. Your professional life is about other people's entertainment, Rita said. Why do you make your personal life about it as well? What do you mean? Always presenting a pleasant exterior, hiding your weaknesses because nobody would be interested or sympathetic, or possibly because they might find it terribly upsetting. She felt sick. I don't know, she said. I don't know what happened. All that time in rehab, Rita said, working with your trainer, what were you doing? Don't think, just answer. Daisy's eyebrows twisted at the stupid question. Recovering? From what? My leg? She said. What happened to your leg? I was shot. Rita's eyes bored into her. Say it again. I was shot. Again. I was shot. Her throat was on fire. A flame ignited through the center of her chest as if it were a piece of paper, scorching brown, then the edges charring and curling before blue and gold flames licked through. James shot me, she said. She felt hot. Her mouth was dry. You were shot, Rita said, each word chiseled from the air. It's a fact. Not a dramatic ploy for attention or a way to monopolize conversation. You had nothing to do with the scars on your leg. You were shot. Not by a random stranger, but by someone you knew. He was your partner. You connected with him as a sister. In your own words, you gave him your time and your trust. You brought water to his desert, and he shot you and killed your friends. I'm cold, Daisy said, reaching for the throw blanket draped over the arm of the couch. Her teeth chattered as she drew it around her. This is crazy, she said. Why does this seem so obvious, and yet at the same time, it's like it's never occurred to me? I was wondering that myself. It's as if you downplayed your entire role in this and made Eric's experience of the shooting a much more terrible thing. Wasn't it? He tried to talk a gunman down. He watched James blow his head off. And you were shot in the leg and lying on the stage floor, all but bleeding to death next to your partner, and watching as James shot the windows of the booth where Eric was. You were bedridden for a month with a horrible injury. You nearly lost your life's dream. Wasn't that terrible as well? It was, but Rita was still. I don't know where I was going with that, Daisy said. Her skull was a vacuum. No train of thought, not even the tracks. A traumatic event like this is tantamount to being in war, Daisy. Tell me again what your father said to you. We come back from war changed, she whispered. Yes. Spiritually and emotionally changed, but also neurologically. Trauma like this literally rearranges your brain's neural pathways. I've read studies about how traumatized youths have trouble regulating their body temperature or judging external temperature, something I think about every week when I see you dressed inappropriately for the weather or burning your mouth on your coffee. Flashing hot and cold, Daisy stared, thinking of all the singed tongues, all the times she misjudged how hot the water was in the shower and how it was always colder outside than she thought. You have a strong sense of responsibility, Daisy. You don't shy from ownership of your actions, which is admirable. But at the same time,
sometimes a legitimate reason exists for poor judgment. I'd like to see you recognize the things beyond your control and acknowledge one or two of the truly shitty things that happened to you, and maybe even accept how being shot severely disabled your ability to take the temperature of a situation and make good decisions.
I was shot, she said, shivering inside her burning skin.
Lucky said you held it all together, Rita said at the next session. She pulled you out of bed, saying you had to get up or everyone else would fall down. Why would she say that?
I don't know. It was something dramatic to shock me back on track, I guess.
Or was it true? Did you feel like you held it all together? Her thoughts rolled their eyes, but she moved past them, looking for how she felt.
Sort of, she said, blinking hard as she remembered the teary-eyed applause the first day she walked back into the dance studios, the hands reaching to touch, hold, hug, and squeeze her. Support was in their touch, but also a desperation.
Thank God, our captain, our leader, you're here. Will's pained eyes leaping from his shorn head as he learned to partner her again, Lucky fussing over her with a royal we, Case embracing her at the end of the day, saying as long as she showed up, he'd show up. And Eric, who wanted her as close to him as possible whenever possible, pulling her into his lap or pushing his shoulders up against her chest in bed.
As long as you're all right, I'm all right. I just need you. Nothing else.
Get up, Daze. You have to get up. If you don't get up, we all fall down.
You did get out of bed, Rita said. You found it in you to get up.
Eric needed me. You needed him too.
After I got out of the hospital last December and John and I drove down to my parents' house, I overheard him and my father talking. John said, I'm sorry I didn't call you sooner.
Pop kind of laughed a little and said, the time to call us was 2 years ago, and you didn't have our number.
Rita nodded.
Nobody called for help, Daisy said.
Was that youth or ignorance?
I think youth certainly played a part. When you're full of adolescent resilience, you feel nothing can permanently hurt you.
I was hurt, Daisy said softly. But I was lucky. Other people I knew were killed. I was still alive. And it's not like I...
Rita leaned forward a fraction.
Not like you.
A long, liquid moment where Daisy stared, mouth open, pressing, reaching, groping for the tantalizing revelation just beyond her mind's reach. Finding and pushing the words out was like trying to string beads on the end of an unraveled and frayed string.
I don't know, she said.
Try. Her brain dug deep, scrabbled in the barren dirt, and came up empty-handed, except for, of all things, Christine Fascara's face, when she was sitting on the edge of the hospital bed and she and Daisy were discussing what to do about the man they loved.
I need to talk to you as a mother. He's breaking down. He wouldn't get out of the car after the last funeral. David almost had to carry him. He can't eat. I've never seen him not be able to eat.
He was sick. He'd been through so much.
And you hadn't?
I had, but... Her breathing was growing choppy.
But what?
But it was different.
How?
The words were sharp, cutting the inside of her mouth.
It wasn't as bad.
Why?
I don't know what's wrong with me.
Try this on, Rita said, and don't be afraid to say it doesn't fit. But within your circle of friends, the friends who survived the shooting, something made you feel your pain didn't measure up to theirs. You didn't hurt as much. You weren't quite in the same club.
Daisy felt her eyes bulge.
Tears spilled over and down her face.
Yes.
Especially Eric.
No,
she shook her head in vehement denial.
He never implied he had it worse.
It's not what he did. It's what you felt. What you believed to be true. You downplayed your part and thought his was the worst experience.
But it was, because I didn't remember.
You didn't remember the shooting?
Yes.
Why did that make you different? Tell me.
They all remembered. Eric could tell a story. David, Lucky, and John, even Will, had tangible memories. I had nothing. I got plucked out of that place and woke up in the hospital and missed everything. Their dreams had imagery and context, and mine were a black cavern of nothingness. I was scared of nothing.
Go on.
Eric went to the funerals. I was safe in the hospital while he went to 4 funerals in 3 days.
You were bedridden.
I know, but I know now. Now that you're pointing it out to me, but why? What does all this mean? I don't understand.
She hammered her fists on her knees, confused and frustrated as her memories were dissected and twisted.
What do I do with this? I didn't consciously think, oh, I had it easy. I shouldn't complain. I only know that I...
That you what?
She was frantic to be understood.
I loved him.
But you couldn't let him hear you scream. Just like you couldn't let your father hear you scream. Anger swept through her and she seized it.
Don't give me any childhood psychobabble bullshit. Don't you blame my father for this. I love my father.
Of course you do, and you kept him safe.
I told you what happened. Hearing me scream would kill him.
He's a grown man. And he's your father. I think he could have handled it. You were lying in a hospital bed with your leg shot and your calf sliced open, yet you thought about your father's needs first. It's incredibly selfless, but it also might have been damaging.
I screamed on Eric. I screamed then. I threw up in front of him. I threw up on him.
In the hospital?
Yes.
But ever again?
I don't remember, no.
So just the once you flayed your own self open and let him see you weak, shattered and broken.
Like glass,
she whispered. And what happened shortly after? Daisy stared, confused.
He went home?
Before that?
He broke down. He collapsed.
Rita nodded. Daisy clicked her tongue in contempt.
You're saying those two things are joined? Connected in my mind, I let him see me wrecked and helpless, and shortly after he broke down and left, and I tied those things together and thought, whoa, better not do that again. Who thinks like that?
Nobody actively thinks like that, Rita said. But certain primitive parts of your brain only know how to think like that. Daisy crossed her arms. I'm not entirely on board with this, but I'm not entirely dismissing it either. It's all food for thought. And not all of it will taste good. Daisy almost canceled her next session, weary of self-introspection and dreading what would be the next thing to emerge from the dirt. At the same time, she was fascinated by the process, and she had to admit, she was feeling a shift deep within, not a window shade snapping up to flood her with clarity, but a slow dawn made up of tiny insights. Things were shifting around in her head and heart and gut, lining up, matching edges, nodding and thinking, yes, I see. This feels strange, but it makes sense. She gathered her courage and her coffee, and she went. Let's talk about your dreams, Rita said.
Which ones?
She turned a few pages. Your dreams were of black nothingness, or else you were vaginally consuming Eric to save him. Even the mention of the dream made Daisy squirm. And when was the last time you had the black dream?
A long time ago, I guess.
When exactly do you remember? She had to think hard.
I don't think I've had it since the window broke.
When the window broke in the diner?
Yes.
And what happened?
I remembered watching James shoot the glass of the booth.
From far away, the sound of smashing glass. Where you had just been, Rita said. Another window shattered.
Closer.
Yes. What were you doing in there? Her fingers pulled at the fringe on the pillows.
I was with Eric.
What were you doing?
We were talking about the way we'd had sex the night before. Talking about love and us and everything.
What are you getting at? With a woolly snap, a strand of yarn pulled free in her fingers. She tucked it in a guilty fist.
What did you tell him you wanted to do?
Fuck him, she thought, and flinched.
No, Something else. She'd been sitting in his lap, straddling his lap. In fact, he had half an erection and his eyes were dripping lust. The previous night's memories clung like perfume to her skin, and all she wanted was to...
I wanted to ditch the rehearsal and leave, she said. I wanted to go back to bed with him.
Behind her head, the window exploded. A roar of icy wind and a tempest of snowflakes from inside the shattered globe.
Oh my God, she said.
Her hands flew to her mouth. Through the blizzard, her mind screamed the impossible.
It's impossible, she said.
But even as the impassioned words left her, her body was telling another story. She was shaking now. Her bones rattled.
I left him.
A splintering sound in her head. What happened in the booth, Daisy?
I wanted to take him out, she said.
But then I left. A slow motion cracking. Daisy threaded her hands through her hair and started to pull.
I left him in there, she said,
her voice rising up shrill. Of its own accord, her head turned, twisting back over her shoulder. James raised his arm and shot the glass.
Eric, 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 Eric. I left him in there. I left him, and then I watched James shoot out the windows.
Did you think he had been killed? Rita asked. Do you remember thinking anything when you saw the windows breaking? Her head tipped back and forth.
I could have saved him, she said. I could have saved us. All I had to do was... If only I had gone with that impulse, we would have been out of the theater, far away from it all, and I wouldn't have been shot, and I wouldn't have broken.
But she did break. Broke and shattered into 1,000 razor shards. Eric didn't even look back after she aimed, fired, and blew their love to smithereens. He just left.
No, I left him, she said. I left him first.
She dissolved into weeping, endless tears streaming from her eyes and mouth and nose. Endless. It was endless. She would sit on this couch and cry for the rest of her life. It wasn't your fault, Rita said softly. You had no control over what happened that day.
But what about the other days? She cried. Those belong to me. Those are mine, and I can't do this anymore.
Can't do what?
I walked away from Eric when I should have stayed, and I stayed with David when I should have walked away. That's my big revelation. Now what am I supposed to do with it? Tell me, what does it change? Nothing. I can't stand this, Rita. It was easier to cut myself. It was sick, yes, but it accomplished something. Cutting into how I feel, digging into the psychological dirt doesn't do anything. Nothing's changed. It still hurts so much, and I still need him to know I'm sorry.
Of course, Rita said. It's difficult to be unresolved.
I would do anything, anything, but what am I supposed to do? I was stupid and weak, and I cracked. I let him down. I never let anyone down in my life. I've always been there. I've always been strong. But I was shot.
She cried hard, terrible sobs from her knees into her palms. Tears from the years gone by. Tears from future years she had yet to get through. The pores of her skin wept with her, wailed and pleaded to be torn and rent with grief, to let the blood flow with her tears.
I hate what I did. I hate myself for what I did. I fucked up, I admit it. I'm not denying it or hiding it or making excuses. I'm trying to face him, but he won't open the door. I was shot and I fell apart and I fucked up and I'm sorry.
She slumped. Tattered and wrecked, a dozen balled-up clumps of tissue at her feet.
It makes no difference how sorry I am, she said. That's what kills me. It makes no difference. I can't do anything about what I did except be sorry and want him to come back. Every day I whisper it inside my head or out loud when no one is listening. It's what I chant inside when I want to cut myself.
Every day I wake up with a man who loves me, and yet I'm reaching out to Eric and thinking, come back to me. Please come back.
A little fever. As usual, John was at the apartment when she got home, curled up under the quilt, napping, and as usual, his arm folded it back for her. She sat on the bed. Her eyes ached. Her heart pulsed with a pain she didn't think was possible to feel, let alone endure.
I can't do this anymore.
You have to. If you don't get up, everyone else falls down. No. I don't have to. I don't have to get up at all for anyone. Eric doesn't care. Why should I?
Honey, John whispered.
A single sob cracked out of her chest, bounced off the walls as her mouth clamped down tight. A creak of bed springs as he scooted over and curved his body around hers at the edge of the bed, his hand soft on her back.
I know it sucks, he said. I know how bad it hurts.
You know nothing, she thought,
trembling with the effort not to cry. She was angry he was there, and hated herself for it, because he cared more than Eric did.
Tell me, Daze, he said, stroking her back. Tell me what happened.
It's hard, she said. It's hard, having so little to give you, feeling like I have nothing but the scraps of myself on my best days, and then coming home from my session so shredded and raw, and you want me to tell you, but it's nothing but him. It's him, John, and Lancaster, and Glass, in my bones and my skin, and I can't get it out. I don't know how you can stay here and watch this. Day after day, you give me your heart and your soul and get next to nothing in return. I honestly don't know how or why you stay. She sank her face into her hands, curved and curled like an ampersand of misery.
If I want to leave, you'll be the first to know, Daze, and we'll have something called a conversation about it.
Sorry, she said to her palms. I'm lost and flailing, and if you weren't here, I'd probably be slicing my skin right now. I'm sorry. You wanted to know, and that's how I feel. I'm sorry. I'm no better than I was a couple months ago, but I'm glad you're here. And I'm sorry.
I'll get you some water, he said. Be right back. Take your shoes off.
Face still buried, she heeled off her shoes. Then she drank the water John brought, icy and numbing against her battered, abused throat.
I go around with either a lump in my throat or a knot in my chest, she said,
like my heart is slowly being ripped out of my ribcage. Sometimes I wonder if I have cancer, or if I'll end up with cancer. This perpetual hurting, how much damage is it doing? How many years am I taking off my life with this kind of constant stress?
It's poison, he said, curled around her again. It hurts coming out. The hardest thing to do is let it hurt. Let it get worse before it gets better.
She forced her eyes not to roll as she set the glass on the bedside table. One more platitude of recovery and she would scream the building down to its girders.
Tell me what you dug up today, he said. Show me. Same way you showed me the glass once. You take away its power, remember?
She took a deep breath and tried to pick out the salient points and string them together. The guilty responsibility implanted in her subconscious as she watched James shoot out the windows of the booth, thinking if only she had acted on a spontaneous sexual impulse, she and Eric wouldn't have been in the theater. How the thought had been suppressed and buried for all these years, save for an inexplicable need to save Eric while they were making love. How the broken diner window had somehow unleashed it all again.
It's crazy, she said.
On one hand, I don't believe it. I can't wrap my mind around the idea. It makes no sense. It seems too convenient, too pat and contrived. And yet, when Rita and I put it all together, I couldn't stop crying. Part of me recognizes it as the truth. It's what happened, and I believe it. God, you must think I'm nuts.
John's hand had kept up a steady stroke along her back, winding his wrist around the length of her hair and letting it fall through his fingers. He listened like an expert, not interrupting or interjecting, only humming to show he was with her. A long moment of exhausted silence then. Outside, the city sang its incessant song. The clang of tires driving across metal plates, the trumpet of car horns, and the dull, rumbling roar underneath it all. Daisy slowly became aware of the apartment being a single hexagon cell in the hive of her building, and the building being one of dozens in her block, hundreds in her neighborhood, millions of windows looking down on the noisy streets, millions of stories behind those windows all making a collective rumble. How you could feel so lonely and misunderstood in the midst of all those buzzing lives.
"Hey," John said.
She looked down at him, his handsome, loving gaze staring up at her. He hadn't laughed or dismissed her, or tried to put his own spin on her pain. She laid her hand on his face.
"I love you,"
she said.
"I'm sorry, I'm so out of my mind."
His hand circled her wrist.
"Can I tell you something now?"
"Come here, honey. Lie down."
She fell onto her side, pushed her shoulders up against his chest, let him cover her up and hold her.
"Do you remember,"
he said,
"after James dropped you in rehearsal?
The day I ran into you and him on the stairs?"
She nodded.
"And I threw my dick around a little and got him in that arm lock against the wall?"
"Did Will teach you how to do that?"
"No, Eric did."
She turned her head back a little.
"He did?"
"Yeah. I don't think you knew about the secret army of brothers keeping an eye on you after the incident. Will and David, naturally, but Neil Martinez, too. And me. Fish talked to each of us, asking to keep an eye out for trouble. He didn't want James anywhere near you. When he talked to me, he said something like, 'I don't care what you do, rough him up if you need to.' And I was like, 'Dude, he's a freaking dancer, not a street thug. Jesus, artists don't get violent, we get dramatic.' Anyway, I don't know the first thing about roughing people up. What, you want me to grand jeté into his face? So he showed me a couple moves, taught me how to punch. I remember wondering who taught him that kind of shit if he didn't have a father."
"Will,"
Daisy said. "He went to taekwondo classes with Will."
"Ah. Anyway, I figured I'd never need it. But then I did. Or rather, I didn't need to do what I did, but I was just..."
She rolled over to face him. "Tell me."
"I was in love with you,"
he said.
"At the same time, I loved Fish like a brother. My own brother always kept his distance from me. I know my being a dancer embarrassed him. It was nothing like the abuse James suffered, but still. I never felt like Tom had my back when I was taking crap from the jocks at school. He sure as shit never took time to show me how to fight. So when Eric, someone I admired, took me aside and gave me, one, his trust with the thing he loved most, and two, the means to fight for you if I had to, it meant a lot. It felt big brotherish. It soothed my ego. It helped me reconcile being a dancer with being a man or whatever. Anyway, when I came across you and James on the stairs, I didn't have to do what I did. It wasn't necessary. He wasn't going to hurt you. He was just a sorry-ass mess by that point. But it was you. And it was the job Fish gave me, and to be honest, it felt really fucking good."
The tiniest trembling was coming from under his clothes. She put her cheek against his chest and listened to the hard beat under his ribs.
"So, after you left..."
"What happened?"
"Well, he kind of shoved me off, shrugged his jacket and his pride back into place. He was like Judd Nelson in The Breakfast Club. He said, 'Check out little Opie, I think I might actually have a hard-on.' I was high on testosterone by then, I can't remember what I said. He was like, 'She's out of your league, kid. It was a nice rescue attempt, but you'll never fuck her.' Then he was trying to get under my skin, implying he had an idea of what you were like in bed."
"What?"
"Oh, stupid shit. You know, I slept a couple nights at J Street. Holy shit, you should hear how Fish makes her scream. She's a handful in the sack, but she gets her legs around him in ways you can't imagine."
"He never slept at J Street," she said.
"He was just trying to get his pride back,"
he said.
"I see it now. I could have helped."
"No, you couldn't," she whispered.
"Maybe not help, but I could have been decent. And the bigger man, I could have walked away, I could have done the right thing. Instead, I got up in his face and said, At least I didn't piss my art away.
Then, of course, I had to twist the knife a little. Where do you think you'll go with this on your transcript? Think Marie or Case will write you a glowing letter of recommendation? I'll be dancing your role in Who Cares in a couple of weeks. You'll be applying to community college back in Pittsburgh. Won't that be fun? Living at home, dodging your old man, and taking care of your poor, drunk mother.
He sighed, his heart kicking up under Daisy's face.
That's the shit I had to wrestle out of my soul in therapy. Feeling like I'd helped put James over the edge. Like I'd driven a couple of nails into the coffin of what he'd done to his life, and I had a part in what happened next. Because when the shots went off and I was in the wing with Lucky, I had her tight under me, and I looked out across the stage and saw you lying there in the blood. This frozen second where James was standing over you with a gun in his hand. And then he looked at me.
John,
she whispered. I thought he killed you. He looked at me, and all I could think was, I'm sorry, Fish. You trusted me. I wasn't supposed to let this happen. I was supposed to be guarding her. Instead, I made her a target, and now she's dead.
She was crying then, a relieved river of validation pouring out of her eyes and nose and throat. She wound her arms up around his neck, pulled herself into him, and clung hard.
You need to know it makes sense to me,
he said, holding her tight, pressing her head to his shoulder.
What you're doing and what you're feeling and pulling out of your guts, it makes sense to me. I can deal with you thinking it makes you unlovable because I'm going to love you anyway. But you have to know, please know, it doesn't make you a mystery to me. Don't be afraid to tell me how you think you could have done something to keep it from happening because I get it. You have no idea how much I get it.
He held her, rocked her until she quieted. His hands ran cool over her flushed face and dry, burning eyes.
Feels like you have a little fever, he said. Want me to get you some Tylenol?
No. Hold me. Don't go away. He gathered her close. Thank you, she said, for being here when I got home tonight.
I'll be wherever you need me to be.
And it was clear to her then how John was always where she needed him. Stepping in to dance when James left her partnerless, showing up to protect her on the stairs, coming out of nowhere to call her name on a random day, waiting at the stage door of the Met to see her home, pulling her out from under a table, forcing her sliced skin into the light, and having the guts to call for help. She held his head. His air filled her with peace. I love you. His mouth shaped a smile as it grazed hers.
James was wrong about that, wasn't he?
They kissed again, longer. Her hands came up and undid a button on her shirt, then the next one, and quickly the rest, then the clasp of her bra, peeling open to him, her skin on fire. His cool hand slid to cup her breasts, and his mouth fell open under hers. He was wrong, she said. They rolled, pulled and yanked at their clothes, slid together and understood each other. The windows buzzed, a single cell in a hive now dripping honey and telling the sweetest of stories. I had no idea John carried a piece of James around with him, Daisy said. It makes me wonder if everyone who was in the theater that day thinks they could have changed it. If only they had done or said one thing differently. James was coming into the theater no matter what you did, Rita said, and the shooting would have irrevocably changed your life whether you were in the theater or not. Will or Lucky could have been killed and it would have been just as devastating for you, a different kind of guilt and responsibility to carry around. I didn't think of it that way. Nothing you did or didn't do could have changed the outcome, Daisy. James came into the theater and certain parts of your life were no longer under your control. I tried so hard to be strong. And maybe you did hold it all together, Rita said.
I don't doubt you were a bastion for your friends, a rock, maybe even a mascot, a symbol of survival. And when you cracked and fucked up, it seemed everything and everyone scattered. That's a terrible emotional burden to carry.
More than ever, Daisy said absently. I wish I could talk to Eric. Just to tell him about some of these things. I feel like I could explain it so much better now, make a better apology.
Not being able to atone is a trial,
Rita said.
For Eric to cut you off and disconnect with no closure without giving you a chance to show your remorse is a terrible burden to carry.
But I fucked up.
Not admirable, no, not your finest moment. It was a thoughtless and cruel thing to do, an egregious error of judgment when your judgment was badly impaired. We've already gone through what happened that day and dug into what may have driven you to it, so let's take it in the other direction now. You're full of guilt and remorse and shame and self-punishment. We need to channel that away from your body to somewhere else, somewhere safe until Eric turns around again.
You are beating your head and fists against a closed door.
A glass door, Daisy said. Glass and windows. It's all I think of.
And closed. You cannot resolve your regret until the door or the window opens. And that's the unfortunate unknown. Will it ever open?
I don't know, Daisy. But what can we do with this remorse and regret? How can we get you to evolve, even though you are not resolved?
I keep thinking about James.